Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Welcome, you're tuned into the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness. I'm your host, Dave Schrader, along with me, Tim Dennis. Another week come and gone, folks. Thank you for hanging in and being a part of this with us. We have our app up now in the iTunes store. If you didn't know about it, go look up the Darkness Radio app. It's free. It's easily accessible, and it will give you ways to communicate and connect with all of our shows. We are aware that there are still a few bugs. And our programmer will be back in town on Monday. They'll be working on it and trying to clean things up a little bit. So just bear with us. Most of the items are working well. I think it's the Legends podcast button. When you click it, it'll take you in. And when you click to play, it'll actually crash the app. So that will be fixed really soon. But you should still have access to this podcast, also to Midnight in the Desert Live. And then you can subscribe and get the podcast. For those of you that have been patiently awaiting the iTunes app, it is out. It is available. And yes, there is one in the Google Play Store for all of you Droid users. It's been out there for years. It's available. Go check it out for yourself. Let's get started, shall we? Our guest joining us tonight has a new book called Lying Wonders, Strangest Things. Michael Brown, our guest. Mr. Brown, thank you so much for joining us today.
Dave, thanks for having me.
You've got 29 books. That's pretty astounding. How long have you been writing?
I wrote my first book in 1976. I was in my early 20s. It was a book about psychokinesis, psychic phenomena. And some of the books are smaller than others. Some are pretty thick. But, yeah, I've been at it as a full-time book author for quite a while now. And a variety, everything kind of from investigative journalism about concerning the mafia and subjects like that to psychic phenomena. And now I focus on supernatural and paranormal phenomena.
That's great. What started your interest in examining the supernatural and paranormal?
Well, Dave, I've been interested in things like UFOs since I was a kid. When I was in junior high school, I remember reading books by a radio broadcaster, Frank Edwards, including a famous book of his called Stranger Than Science. And I read that, reread it, and it was really a compilation of the strangest stories he could find or he'd heard about anywhere. And some of them were not supernatural. They may have had to do with the intelligence of animals or incredible coincidences and strength and so forth. But a lot of them were supernatural and covered everything from Bigfoot and Mothman to the UFO, an alien type thing, Loch Ness Monster, and ghost curses and so forth. I decided to do an update on that after 60 years, and not only an update, but I think with even stranger stories from that whole panoply, that gamut of various oddities and extraordinary happenings that you can find around the world, and I put it together for this book, Lying Wonders, Strangest Things.
Is there a specific aspect of the supernatural that fascinates you most?
Well, I've written a couple books on near-death experiences, even going back to the 1970s when I was a Cub newspaper reporter, or started out as a newspaper reporter. I did stories about alleged haunted houses, ghosts. I used to hear ghost stories on New Year's Eve from my grandmother and so forth. I think that piqued my interest. And you know, I've always, well, I've written about other things for sure, including science books that have to do with science and genetics and toxic waste and everything else. I always kept my ear to the rail when it came to the paranormal. And for the last 19 years, I've had a website that's focused totally on the spiritual. It's called spiritdaily.com. And a lot of it has to do with supernatural phenomena around the world of various kinds. So, you know, anything of that sort is just of an interest to me and has been for just about my entire life.
In looking back at your life, have you had paranormal experiences happen in or around you, or has it just been a fascination?
Oh, I've had my share. I don't know where to start. When I was doing the book on psychic phenomena, it was a book called PK, A Report on Psychokinesis. It came out in 1976. It was the first book ever written solely on psychokinesis in a popular way. When I was writing that book, I was naive enough to go into haunted houses and to mess around with mediums and Ouija boards and things of that nature. And I had any number of experiences. I remember going into one place in Binghamton, New York. I think it was on a street they call Oak Street, and we were messing around with the Ouija board because this place was supposed to have a spirit. And something was spelling things out. I don't know if it was just our subconscious moving the pointer around to various, you know, letters and numbers or whatever it was. But all of a sudden, the room got extraordinarily cold. And we went over to look at the thermostat. It had indeed dropped. It was in the 50s. And all of a sudden, I felt something just lift me up quickly and whisk me across the room off my feet. And a friend of mine who was doing research alongside me, he was an associate professor at State University of New York in Binghamton, he said I was literally off my feet across the living room. So, you know, you mess around. Well, that's why I say naive, because I used to think that these things were just a power of the mind, that psychokinesis, that it was a power of the mind. And, you know, I wasn't concerned with evil spirits because I figured I didn't know anything about evil spirits. I figured, well, maybe there's a devil, but he's busy with Linda Blair. So, I was going into this blinders on, and I paid quite a price for that. I had many, many things happen to me through the years. And
well, do you believe that was something evil in the sense of what we would consider demonic, or do you believe it was just an angry spiritual force?
Well, in that case, I don't know. I know in some cases I have a strong opinion it was a evil force, but I also believe that there are discarnate spirits, that there are disembodied spirits, that there are souls that wander about in an earthbound state. They haven't gone to the other side. They haven't gone into the light, and they're overly attached to a thing or a person, to a house. That's why we get things that go bump in the night. They're obsessed with something, or else they're fearful of going into the light that we hear about from near-death experiences, you know, on the other side. They're around, and some are nicer than others. You know, when you die, in my opinion, you have the same personality. And if there are things to clean up, then, and they're not cleaned up, then you can cause people around you some problems if you're attached to them or to the place they're living in. So I certainly think it can be that, although I think in many cases that it is, in fact, demonic spirits, and I think they're very, very adept at masquerading as spirits of the deceased. So you have to be extremely cautious and messing around with things like the Ouija board, going to seances, channeling, are, as far as I'm concerned, pure danger.
When you get flung across the room, now, if we look at this realistically, how far? I mean, was this like you got knocked over and fell a few feet? Did you, was this horror movie time and you were launched a good 6-7 feet across the room? What can you describe to us about that?
You mean the case in Binghamton?
Yes.
No, I mean, that was probably a good, let me see, the room, it was a pretty sizable room. I would say that that I, for about 10 feet, where my feet were not touching the ground, and I was just kind of whisked, just in real quick motion, but he, right in front of him, and I knew what was happening. I was fully aware it was happening. Another time with him, we were investigating a, quote, haunted, unquote, apartment, and once again, messing around with the Ouija board, we figured we would be able to determine what was behind the alleged haunting by using a Ouija board, and stuff started happening there, and I decided to stay over.
If I could ask, when you say you're messing with the Ouija board, can you go into that a little bit more detailed? What exactly were you doing, and what was being communicated?
Well, who's here? You know, is somebody here? Who's haunting this place? You know, what's your name? In the case of that apartment, I don't remember what it said. I know that at one time...
So it's just the basic questions. Okay, I got you.
Yeah. And I stayed overnight in that place, stayed on the couch. And in the middle of the night, I woke up. And there was something right on top of me. I was paralyzed. You know how when you put one of those 9-volt batteries against your tongue, you feel that tingling on your tongue?
Right.
I don't know if you ever did that when you were a kid.
Yeah.
Well, that's how my whole body felt. And I couldn't move. I tried to scream, tried to shout. I couldn't. And there was something on top of me in this apartment. So this is why I say these things. That's not exactly a pleasant experience, and I don't think it indicates a positive spirit. So you have to be very careful with this stuff. It's fascinating. It's, quote, fun, unquote. But if I could do it all over again, I wouldn't do it all over again. I wouldn't do all that over again. I'd be
were
much
these
more careful.
Spirits, were these spirits threatening in nature in their communication through the Ouija board, or would they lure you in and then all hell would break loose?
Well, that's, you know, it's a very perceptive question, and it's the latter. There weren't threats. They were just, you know, they would answer questions, pretend to be, let's say, an old king or something, or somebody who lived in the house, whatever, you know. And I also, when I lived in, I lived in Manhattan for quite a while as a freelance book writer and journalist. And when I was there, even though I was writing about other things, I mentioned the book on the mafia. I wrote the first book on toxic waste, Love Canal, those type things. Even though I was doing secular work, as I would put it, regular work, non-supernatural work, natural work, I maintained, as I said, a cottage interest in the preternatural, the paranormal, whatever you want to call it. And my agent actually was my agent's assistant, who handled a lot of my work down in the Chelsea area of Manhattan. She was in a townhouse with several other women who were in publishing, some of them. And they had all kinds of things that were going on in this old townhouse. So I used to go down there, and I was fascinated with it and so forth. And during that period of time, I started to suffer all kinds of maladies, mainly emotional, psychomotive, psychological. And I actually had a dream during that whole time that kind of jolted me out of those types of investigations, because it was a real red warning signal flashing in front of my face. You know, when I was doing a book on the mafia, Dave, I've got to tell you, too, never mind just the stuff that happens in allegedly haunted houses or when we're messing with seances, but I had an interview for this book. It was for Simon & Schuster. I had to interview some heavy-duty gangsters, including spending time weeks with this one guy who had been arrested for murder. He was hiding out because he had squealed. He was hiding out in Maryland. He was from Jersey, New Jersey, Newark area. And during that time of interviewing him and hitmen and so forth, I started to encounter supernatural events that reminded me of what happened in Binghamton. So these type of things don't just come with haunted houses. They come with evil. They come with negative situations.
So you think that by just communicating with these mobsters, these gangsters, any of the negativity, death, and evil that they'd done was actually taking form around you?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like you're around a dog and the fleas can jump off on you. If you're rolling around with something like that, you're going to become infested. Something could attach to you. I believe that, in fact, did happen to me. And it was, I remember one time I had a friend of mine who was a detective in the Essex County Special Prosecutor's Unit. And he dealt with all the mobsters and so forth. And he had a guy on a street who was still an informant, a guy who had done contract killings, but he was staying on the street as an informant for a while. He was trying to stay out of jail, and that was the deal, that he was out there setting, you know how they do, they set people up and so forth. He wear a wire probably and all that type thing. And he agreed as a favor to my friend, the detective, to take me around Newark area and show me where a lot of bodies had been buried. And he had done, as they put it, work, unquote, you know, hits with the main person I was writing about in my book. So I rode around with him that day in Newark. He had a fur-lined Mercedes, even though it was back in the early 80s. He had a phone in his car. He had, he had a suit on. You could see his biceps through the suit. He was a muscular guy, and he was a mean-looking guy. And I'll just never, the reason I bring him up is that I'll never forget, even though I wasn't one to be going to church back then. And I remember when he would turn to me and look at me as we were driving around. There was something in his eyes that was reptilian. There was something that was not human. And I ran across that with another hitman also who was in a state penitentiary he was a real killer down in Texas. There's something that is emanating from them, radiating from them, that reminds me again of what I had encountered years before when I was stumbling around haunted houses.
Did you ever consider speaking to them and asking if they had supernatural encounters? I'd just be curious if you know, things that you were picking up on might be haunting them.
I know the answer to that, because the guy I was, in one case anyway, the guy I was down hiding out with, he had testified against 74 gangsters in the Gambino, Genovese family, Bruno family, a number of families in the New York City, Philadelphia area. He actually put away more people than Joe Valachi, even though he wasn't anywhere near as well known. But at any rate, I was down at his hideout with him and his family, and things happened in their house. They would tell me stories about things that were occurring. I remember also his daughter's objects mentioned to me that small objects would fly across their room. I remember entering one of the rooms upstairs in his house, and immediately this big painting fell down, crashed from the wall. So there, and I remember he was involved in a murder, and it was actually somebody who had lived in their house and was like a gopher for them. He was an addict. And after this kid was killed, he didn't actually kill him. He was there when the kid was killed, though. They were afraid he was going to squeal on them. So his crew in New Jersey had murdered him. But he appeared in apparition to this gangster's wife. And a number of things like that occurred while I was in the house. Some very strange events and noises and so forth, or at least certainly feelings, I should say.
That has got to be chilling to not only be kind of in the position of hanging out with kind of a heavy hitter, but also surrounded with the strange and the supernatural all kind of conjoined in that moment.
Well, yeah, you know, and there's a spiritual link because I don't know if I'm going too far with this stuff for your listenership or not.
No, we are a strange world paranormal show, so you let us know what you got. Yeah.
Well, I remember his wife telling me. See, they had killed a guy named Jed, who they were afraid was going to go to the police about something to keep himself out of a drug bust or whatever, and he appeared in apparition to this gangster's wife, and he was dripping water, and he had like swampy vegetation on him because they had sunk him in a lake up in the Pocono Mountains in Pennsylvania. But it was very interesting because when he was describing the murder to me, which was very hard for him to do because the guy had lived in his house and everything, but when he was describing the assassination of this kid up in the Poconos, all the time he spoke about the murder, his Doberman Pinscher, which was in the backyard, we were on the second floor, he's telling me the story, that Doberman wailed in the most uncanny, eerie way. You know, it certainly couldn't hear us talking. It was the middle of the day. There was no reason for it to be howling out there. It started howling when we began to discuss the murder, and it stopped right when we were finished with the description of the murder scene. So there were things like this, and it was actually it was that experience as well as what was going on in my agent's assistant's house that led me to looking at askance at this type of phenomena. You know, I mean, I did, when I was doing that PK, I interviewed a lot of psychics too. I was at Kent State University's Smith Hall of Physics testing a guy who could levitate a table in a way that clearly was supernatural. And we showed that right down there in the laboratory. This scientist, this physicist, Dr. Wilbur Franklin, major physicist, he was working with Stanford Research Institute, and he had analyzed a ring that had been deformed by Uri Geller. And I know a lot of people think Uri Geller is just an outright trickster, a fraud showman, and he might be on occasion. But let me tell you something. There are definitely things that happened with Uri Geller that cannot be explained by the amazing Randy or any magician. And I know that from my own personal visit with Uri Geller while I was researching that book on psychokinesis. So, you know, there's a wide range here. If you want to know the experience, that the two things to completely convince me that Uri Geller certainly has supernatural capability, I'll tell you, but I have to go in a little more detail, and like I said, I don't know how much detail you want.
We've got 90 minutes together, and love to hear stories where people are giving us different aspects of what people think they know. So Uri Geller, of course, you know, many people have tried to debunk or claim as a fake and a fraud. If you were witness to seeing some of this phenomena, I'd love a firsthand account. So please feel free.
Well, let me give you two examples. The first one is not a personal account. The second one will be. Dr. Wilbur Franklin, this physicist at Kent State, was out in California at with the scientist at Stanford Research Institute who was studying Geller. At one point, they were talking with Geller, and one of the scientists said, took out his wedding band, a platinum wedding band, and he said, "Can you do anything with this?" And Geller put his hand over his. He was holding the ring, not Geller. Put his hand over the scientist on, you know, clenched fist. And when the scientist then opened it up, the ring was split. Okay, now it was fractured. This is a platinum ring. It's not something you can easily tear apart. Dr. Franklin took that ring back to Ohio and put it under an electron microscope. And he said that the fracture surface in that platinum showed two effects he'd never seen, and it could not be duplicated by any known laboratory means, not laser, not even a device that could freeze something. He said that in one part of the fracture surface, there was incipient melting. In other words, the atoms had started to melt. Right next to it, juxtaposed to it, was an effect that could only occur with absolute zero, temperatures of absolute zero, just the opposite. How could that happen on the same fracture surface? And is anyone seriously going to tell me that a magician could duplicate that? When I was going to see Uri Geller, And I put pictures of that fracture surface in that book of mine I mentioned to you, because it was a book really that was written from a journalistic standpoint. When I went to see Uri Geller, before I did, I interviewed Melbourne Christopher. Does that ring a bell to you?
It does not.
Okay. Melbourne Christopher, he's kind of an old timer, but back in the 70s, he was president of the American Magicians Association. He was also known as the foremost expert on psychic magic, on fake supernatural events. He didn't believe in anything supernatural. I actually met him at the Houdini Museum in Niagara Falls, Ontario, and I said to him, "Well, I'm going to see Uri Geller." I said, "What should I ask him to do?" He said, I'm going to tell you something to do that nobody does with Uri Geller, and that there is absolutely no way he could use trickery. He couldn't do it. And I said, "Well, you know, what's that?" He said, "Well, you're going to go there. Uri Geller is going to say, draw something. Well, he's got his eyes closed and he's going to open his eyes and he's going to draw the same thing." He said, "It's obvious. He's peeking, reading the top of your pen as you're drawing, even though you don't think he can do it, or somehow it's making an imprint that he can see." He said, instead tell him to send you an image." And so when I went to see Geller, he was living on the Upper East Side of Manhattan at the time. We sat down and we were talking about various things. And I said to Geller, "I'd like to do some telepathy." And he said, "Fine." He says, "You want to draw something and see if I can draw it?" And I said, "No." I said, "I want you to draw something and send it to me." So, and he didn't hesitate. He said, "Okay." So Geller goes and draws something. I have no idea what it was. I'm just sitting there. Then he folds up the paper. He hands it to me. I put it under my leg. I closed my eyes and I immediately saw, as if formed with lightning or some electrical pulse, I saw a Christmas tree with three ridges on each side on her right side, the lowest ridge was disconnected from the trunk. So I quickly drew that. Then I reached under my leg and I unfolded what he had done, and it was the exact same thing, right down to the disconnection between the trunk and the first ridge on that Christmas tree. You cannot use magic for that. Now, did Uri Geller at times? I don't know if it at times when the force wasn't there or whatever, because you can't really control this stuff. That he may have done some stuff. I don't know. He was a showman. He made money from it. Still makes money from it. And I don't think that's laudable. But during that same session with Geller, while we were talking, all of a sudden there was this loud bang in his living room, and we looked over to the far corner. A rock had flown into the room and smashed into this beautiful wood chessboard he had. And it looked like an antique, or it looked pretty exotic. And he starts yelling, "You see what I mean? Nobody believes this stuff. You see what I mean?" And I walked over, and this rock looked like it was porous. It looked like merely a meteorite. And here's this chessboard. Now, first of all, at the time I was a newspaper reporter working in Niagara County, New York. Why would this famous guy in the Upper East Side of New York sacrifice a very expensive chessboard to fool me? So we went over there. I said to him, "I'm sorry, but can I search your apartment? I wanted to see." He couldn't have thrown it. We were sitting. There's no way he could have thrown it, and it obviously came straight above the chessboard, and we were way across the room. And I'm staring at him. I was talking to him when it occurred. So I said, "I need to search your room." I was looking for an accomplice. I checked his closets. I checked underneath everything. There was no one else there. So, there have been thousands of cases with Geller of things like that occurring, including in front of some major scientists and in front of people like, I believe, Dr. Edgar Mitchell, who walked on the moon.
Great stuff. Fantastic stories. And hey, folks, if you love stories, Pluto TV has something great for you. They're the leading free streaming television service. You can watch over 100 TV channels and thousands of movies all on demand. And the best part, they're all free. No credit card needed, no sign up. Pluto TV is the easy and completely legal way to watch your favorite TV shows and hit movies. What are you waiting for? Never pay for TV again. Download Pluto TV for free on all of your favorite devices. Your phone, Roku, Amazon Fire TV, Apple TV, Smart TVs, PlayStation, heck, anywhere you can stream, you can get the best. Get yourself Pluto TV and never miss another exciting moment of free TV and free movies. 60 seconds, that's exactly how long this commercial lasts. Well, it's how long it's supposed to last. Sometimes I wander and start to ramble. Tim can attest to that. And God, you never know what could happen to me. We could be talking cars one minute, ghosts the next, and Bigfoot encounters, but I digress. You know what else you can do in about a minute? Well, you can get an offer for your car with TrueCar. That's right. In the amount of time it takes to floss your teeth, pet your dog, do a few sit-ups, or just listen to my voice, you can get a true cash offer. Best of all, you can do it from your smartphone or from home. Just go to TrueCar. Simply enter your license plate number and watch how your car's details begin to pile up. Answer a few questions and you'll get an accurate true cash offer from a local TrueCar certified dealer. It's that easy. After that, you can bring your car in. They'll check it out with you together. You can ask questions and get the answers you need, so there's no surprises. Then simply leave with your check or trade in your car for a brand new ride. So when you're ready to experience a better way to sell or trade in your car, check out TrueCar today. We're back. Michael Brown, our guest. These are really bizarre, strange tales we're hearing, and I love the insights you're giving us, Michael, stories that we've never heard before, and especially in investigating the claims of Uri Geller and being there as a firsthand account eyewitness. Again, a lot of people say he's very intelligent, he's adept at trickery and chicanery, so maybe he was able to trick you and fool you on some of these aspects, but you got up. You didn't just sit there and, wow, that was weird, and report on it. You started looking for a plausible explanation for what these occurrences could have happened with.
That's right. And you know, how about that fracture surface with the incipient melting? And
yeah, that's crazy.
Effects?
Yeah.
And there's much more than that. I mean, there are Geller as well as other, after when Uri Geller started appearing on TV, there thousands and thousands of people, especially in the UK, when they would watch TV, would report that cutlery in their home, silverware, would bend and curl and everything like he was doing on TV. And there was a spate of spoon benders, especially kids, who suddenly could do the same thing Geller could do after watching him on TV. But the thing is, now certainly hundreds of kids are not master magicians, but and they were studied by scientists in many cases. Some of these people could bend an object that was in a glass tube. In other words, they couldn't even be touched. They weren't even touching it. And again, this gets very difficult to explain in physical terms. I interviewed an Oxford magician, mathematician in Toronto, who had turned into a parapsychologist, and they were studying ways of trying to learn to create psychokinetic effects, and this they had learned to make rapping sounds in wood and so forth. He felt it was just the power of the mind, not a supernatural thing. But I'd like to make a point with all of this. I mean, I did stories on random event generators for like the Atlantic Monthly and Reader's Digest and so forth. Real scientific stuff. But I'd like to make a point about the spiritual side of it. This one fellow we were studying in upstate New York, who raised the tables and so forth, he had been kicked out of being a teacher at the local school because they claimed he was in league with the devil. And at the time, I thought that was absurd. But at any rate, he had psychic abilities. I mean, like, when I met him, he said, well, I can find objects if you hide them. And I said, like what? He says, well, hide what you want. And I said, okay, I'm going to hide my college ring, Fordham University. And I had my friend walk him down to the end of the block, and I watched him. And then I was in the house, and I hid my ring in his cupboard in the back and underneath these tea bags. And when he came in the house, he went directly for it. He found it in, like, I don't know, less than a minute, probably less than 30 seconds. And he did this repeatedly, including when I brought in two magicians to witness it. They were totally baffled by what he did, including the way that the table would rise when he put his hands on it. You could press down on a table, and it would come bounding back up as if you were trying to press down a beach ball in water. This is the fellow I brought to Kent State University's physics Smith Hall of Physics. And at any rate, I thought it was just the power of the mind. But come to find out that he also went into trances. And when he did, a spirit would speak through him, had a name and everything else. His voice would change, would deepen quite radically, and strange things would occur. Like when we first tried to tape it, at the minute that this voice came through, the tape recorder went off. So the next time I figured, oh, okay, I'll bring two tape recorders. So we started two tape recorders, both went off simultaneously. And so we never got it on tape. That's really hard to explain in normal, rationalistic terms. And one of his neighbors told me how he'd be passing by this fellow's house and just hear these smashing noises and everything in the house when he, when the psychic was away, poltergeist activity. So you got to be careful, because I thought it was just the power of the mind. But when it, in his case, I think certainly it was a spirit involved also, or primarily.
That's astounding. I know you've got a lot of other stories to cover as we're going to go through this, and I'm certainly interested. Again, I want to mention the name of the book, Lying Wonders, Strangest Things. Before we go into the bottom of the hour break here, explain to me the title of the book, Lying Wonders, Strangest Things.
Well, Strangest Things, of course, because there is more than 60 short chapters. I hope each one extremely engaging on the most bizarre phenomena that I could find readily around the world, some of which I was directly involved with. And the Lying Wonders comes from Thessalonians in the Bible, and also relates to what we're talking about, on how spirits can come and masquerade, you know. So as a lying wonder, which was warned about in the Bible. So, you know, I don't want to get real preachy about it, but I just hope people keep a prudent distance from some of this stuff. Take it from a person who learned the hard way.
Let's do this. We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll continue with more unusual stories he's collected for his new book, more unusual experiences he's had. Stay tuned. We've got a lot coming your way right here on the Best in Paranormal Talk Radio. I'm Dave Schrader. This is Beyond the Darkness. Want a podcast? Got a podcast? Then check out Launchpad DM, powered by Podcast One. Launchpad DM is a totally free platform and service for anyone who wants to podcast, offering unlimited hosting and access to a dashboard with all of your show's analytics. You own and control everything, including subscribers. And it's a great discovery tool to help people find your podcast. You may even get invited to join the official Podcast One roster with even more perks, like access to producers, marketers, sales teams, and more. Sign up today at launchpaddm.com.
Beyond the Darkness.
Welcome back to the program. Our guest tonight, Michael Brown, Lying Wonders, Strangest Things. That's the new book. We have a link up for that on today's program and a link to Michael's website so you can follow along with him and all of the work and research and news stories that he posts and shares as well. Let's, you know, in the blurb on your book, it talks about one of the strange stories, a boy that disappears into thin air time and time again. That was one of the stories I wanted to dig a little deeper into, if you wouldn't mind sharing the story of that.
Yeah, I mean, that's about as bizarre as it gets when it comes to somebody who is haunted or possessed, however you want to label it. That was a kid named Cornelio Closa, and it was in the Philippines in 1952. As a schoolboy, he was walking home with a friend, and he told his friend that he could see this beautiful young lady across this field, and his friend couldn't see anything. He ran up to where he claimed to see this apparition, and he was there for a while, and they came back. And soon after that, Cornelio's his personage, his personality shifted, and then shifted very radically. It changed. He transformed into, from a rather mild-mannered kid to a very hostile boy, getting into fights constantly, causing all kinds of trouble at school. And in fact, then this phenomenon began to occur that I personally had not heard about before. And that's according to some very credible witnesses. He would, on occasion, just disappear in front of people's eyes. He'd be in front of his parents, his siblings. He disappeared in front of his entire classroom, including the teacher, just was standing there and then gone. And he'd be gone sometimes for minutes, sometimes for hours. And he said he would come back and he would say that that woman had taken him on a trip. Well, anyway, obviously this frightened his parents. I mean, this went on for, I think, the better part of a year, along with other phenomena that you hear about in cases of possession. Well, they finally took him to this evangelical type service. And in the course of this service, he saw this apparition of this woman again, but now she transformed from that beautiful woman into this terrible, ugly beast. And I guess he got scared. He realized what was going on, and it was the beginning of his, what they would call, deliverance. But pretty bizarre stuff when somebody actually vanishes in front of your eyes. And I think, really, it's not so much vanishing, although they can, you know, these spirits can cause teleportation effects, but more likely it's simply a spirit shielding him from physical visual view, from optical view, because that can certainly happen and is in the literature of mystical theology.
How long did this go on for this kid? And you know, I mean, what there has to have been some major investigation that went on with that.
Well, only major, only in the sense of trying to call in ministers and so forth. I think they had a psychologist involved. I'm not exactly sure on that. But as I recall, it went on just about a year, and it was torture for his parents. They nailed down the windows in the house. They forced him to stay in one room, and yet he would disappear from the house. He'd be gone. And no sign of anything disrupted, doorways, windows, nothing. He'd just be gone, and then he'd show up later. So, when and like I said, besides that, he was biting students and his teacher, and you know, he was possessed. It was a case for an exorcist, but no exorcist was immediately available until later on. But yeah, you get some strange stories from the Philippines. There was another case in the Philippines. Actually, my wife just sent me a news story on it. They're going to be making a movie about her. Her name was Clarita in the Philippines. I have a chapter about her in the book. She was afflicted by some kind of an entity that was causing these deep, or two entities actually, these deep fang marks in her neck and on her back and scratch marks, claw marks. And, I mean, you know, you can accuse a person of a lot of trickery, but try biting yourself in your lower back. Try to bite yourself in the back. And she had bites up and down her back, deep. Finally, in that case, again, in this case, a minister, the archdiocese did not want to handle it. They felt it was too dangerous. Because two people died, they imprisoned this girl. They put her in prison because she was just wild. And she had been on a street as a prostitute at a very young age because she was homeless for reasons I can't recall just now. But they put her in a jail there in Manila, and she just caused such upheaval there. At one point, the voice came out of her, hideous voice came out of her, and threatened this doctor who was trying to help her that it was going to kill him. The doctor died the next day for reasons that remain obscure.
Holy cow.
Then, not too long afterwards, she got into a rift with one of the prison officials, and he shouted at her and insulted her and so forth. And once again, the voice came out, threatened his life, and he died. immediately afterwards. So the Archdiocese, and this is all in the newspapers, this was being covered in the regular daily newspapers when it was going on. There's pictures of it online, you know. If you want to look up Clarita, Philippines, fang marks or whatever. And they're making, like I said, they're making a movie about it right now. But eventually, this evangelical came in, this minister, and rather quickly dispensed of the spirit that was possessing this poor kid. So you get some strange stories out of the Philippines.
Yeah, it sounds like you do. Very, very unusual. Were there ever any of these stories that as you were researching them and investigating, you ever felt like maybe you were in over your head, you were up against something that could harm you or your loved ones potentially long term?
Yes. I think that not from the standpoint I come from now, because look, let me be straightforward with you. I come from a Christian standpoint now. I came the hard way, but that's my perspective now. But I believe that if you're going into this in a straightforward secular way without proper protection, that you can be mightily harmed by these things. If you'll allow an editorial, I'll tell
Please.
You that I think. Well, I think there's a connection between all these type things. I think there's a connection between the type of phenomena we've been talking about with psychics and haunted houses, between that and curses, cars that historically have been cursed, or mummy curses and all that, that there's links between that and the, you know, Mothman in West Virginia, Loch Ness Monster, these so-called creatures, whether they're werewolves elsewhere, whether they're yetis, abominable snowmen, skunk ape in Florida, Bigfoot in the Northwest, UFOs, aliens, grays, insectoids, reptilians, whatever you want to put out there, and especially alien abductions. I think that they're all that they're all spiritually linked. I think that they're all spiritual deceptions, or at least most of them. I wouldn't dare sit here and say there can't be some type of a cryptid, some type of a creature that has survived without anyone noticing, although it's pretty unlikely these days with the population. Nor would I sit here and tell you that the Earth has not been visited by other planets, because, you know, what do they estimate? A billion galaxies, a trillion stars? They can't really estimate. So I'm not going to say that, but I think that in the majority of cases of, let's take UFOs, UFO abductions, they're very, very similar to cases you see in parapsychology, to cases you see in the occult, to cases you see in possession, haunted houses, and so forth. In fact, in 1947, before Roswell, the first famous flying saucer case in 1947, in June of that year, early July, was Kenneth Arnold. And he was a pilot, very reputable, actually was a politician, businessman, so forth, and he was an amateur pilot. He was flying over Mount Rainier and spotted these nine objects going at what he estimated was about 1,800 miles an hour. He described them and made headlines all around the country. He's the one, it was from him that they coined the expression flying saucer. He didn't say that the objects looked like flying saucers. He said that they were moving like a saucer if you threw it across the surface of water. And then the newspaper picked up on that. But at any, my point with Kenneth Arnold is that that first of all, he was flying over Mount Rainier, which is also known for occult type things down there on the surface, and for sightings of Bigfoot. Later on, Kenneth Arnold reported seeing UFO type orbs of light in his house. And, you know, why would extraterrestrials be whizzing around the inside of his house little orbs? I think it's a classic case of spirits. You know, spirits can appear any way they want. And they do appear any way they want. That's why I call it lying wonders. They can be extremely deceptive. And you have to be careful because they can come to you as nice, your grandmother who died, and you know, they can infiltrate dreams. They can do a lot of things to, as you pointed out, ensnare a person. So you have to be cautious of that deceptive side. But I'm saying that I believe there's a common link between much of this phenomena, and you know, David, for no other reason, if we're with all of these UFO sightings, and what this one scientist astronomer estimates that more than a million, where's the physical evidence? I mean, I want to see it. Where is it? Has it been put under a microscope? Where is it? Since the 1940s, the government's been testing it. And I believe that the reason that presidents who promise to get to the bottom of it can't get to the bottom of it is because no one ever has gotten to the bottom of it. It's a spiritual, ethereal, ephemeral, deceptive type phenomenon going on here. And
right. As a matter of fact, we just reported yesterday, Bernie Sanders has promised to, you know, release disclosure if he becomes president. And I think every president has admitted that they will come forward with what they find. And every one of them seems to get shut down.
That's right. Ronald Reagan saw one himself. So did Jimmy Carter. Maybe you've reported on that already. Jimmy Carter watched one with a group from his church for, right, I think, 15 minutes. So they've even seen them. And, you know, the same thing with Area 51 and all of these mysteries. All of these sightings, where's the evidence? Just one piece from the sightings, from these alleged crashes. I recently visited an alleged crash site in southern Missouri. It's known as MO-41 because in 1941, this is six years before Roswell, a flying saucer supposedly crashed just south of Cape Girardeau, Missouri, southeastern part of the state. And, excuse me, I went to, no one knows exactly where, but one of the ways that this account came down is they had called the police and firemen had called a local preacher to come and do last rites because there was a crash and there were bodies. Well, he claimed later, he only talked about it once to his immediate family, and he said, this is the first and last time I'll talk about this, because the military swooped right in. He claims, just, you know, warned everyone not to talk about it. But he said he saw the craft. There were three aliens, or what he thought were aliens, the grays, you know, the short entities. One was still gasping, he thought. But at any rate, with all these crashes like what he described and described at Roswell and described on the plain of San Augustine in New Mexico and elsewhere in Russia and in Africa and so forth, South Africa, where's the evidence in Rendlesham? Why is it in Rendlesham Forest in England where at more than 20 military types directly were direct eyewitnesses to a light that descended and for an extended period of time in the course of several nights, and they went right up to it. Again, why with all of these sightings and so forth don't we have any tangible evidence? And why is it that you get the same after effects that people who have alien encounters will smell sulfur, brimstone, which is classic in cases of demons and possession? And the same thing occurs at Loch Ness. The same thing occurs with Mothman in West Virginia and all of these other cryptids and so forth. How could it be that there are an estimated 300 lakes just in North America that have strange, unexplained creatures, and yet we don't have one carcass? So I think there are spiritual links. And I think that there are intelligences, super intelligences in a spiritual realm that can project anything they want to us, and they do.
Do you, and I get that concept, something is projecting, something is giving this, is it to lead us astray from religion, or is it to cause dissension amongst one another so that there's a constant rift between people?
Well, I think it can certainly do both of those. It can also simply attach to you, looking to attach itself to you and draw energy, just cause disruption. These are can be very hostile entities that their only pleasure is causing pain to others, including humans. And so they're looking to attach themselves to you, to your situation, and they do. I would, you know, I know I can't get through to a lot of people who are invested in a new age and so forth, but I just say, just be cautious, step back, you know, don't move too fast into this realm. I did, and I paid for it.
All right. Now, as we continue to go through these strange encounters and bizarre stories, again, the book is called Lying Wonders, Strangest Things. Michael Brown, our guest and the author of that book. I know that you talk about curses, and are there curses that changed history? What can you tell us about that? Curses are something we're always fascinated in digging into. It sounds so ludicrous in one sense, but terrifying in the next.
Yeah, and you know, there's so many cases of that. You have, I mentioned like mummy curses, and some people used to believe that that the Titanic had a mummy on board. Although I don't think that's true. I think that's a myth, but. You know, there are folks who, throughout all of history, who have claimed that they've been affected by, like, King Tut's tomb. There is also a case that I write about that occurred, some people think it started World War One, when an archduke was assassinated, and there's his car, the car he was riding in when he was assassinated, Archduke Ferdinand, when he was assassinated, was said to have been cursed. And then afterwards, after he died, and it was his assassination that set off World War One in Sarajevo, after his assassination and the car was, you know, put in the hands of other people, they died sooner than they should have. They had inexplicable things happen to them. A series of unfortunate events, I guess you could say. So I believe there's no question that there are cases where curses operate. We see a lot of Bigfoot and animal mutilations, UFO sightings, missing times, strange disappearances, all these type things around Indian burial mounds. And in some cases, it might be because there are curses at work there. So, you know, there was a Siberian mummy that some people think affected Hillary Clinton. She visited it when she was on a trip to
what
the former Soviet Union. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
And I have it in a book. I get into the details of it in the book, but I don't know if it's true. You know, if she had any curse from that, but. I call it the chapter "Mummies the Curse" because, you know, that was the claim with this. So I think yes, I think that there are cases that are true. I don't know if it, like you take James Dean, the famous actor. He had a Porsche 550 Spider. You know, he used to race it, and that car killed him. He got in a crash with it. And then later on, when, you know, the car was purchased by somebody else, I think it was a doctor. First of all, Dean's companion, who was a German mechanic who survived the crash, he died in a second very similar accident soon after. When a man named George Barris bought that Spider, it immediately slipped off a trailer and broke a mechanic's leg. Not long after that, parts from the car, the engine, the drivetrain, they were sold. And none of the parts boded very well. I mean, there was one guy who was in a vehicle powered by the engine of Dean's car, and he lost control during a race and hit a tree and was killed instantly. A second guy bought that same drivetrain, and he was injured severely when his car suddenly locked up and rolled over. And it goes on. Tires from Dean's car blew out simultaneously and so forth. So finally, I think it was the California Highway Patrol prevailed upon people to look, just put this car in a safety exhibit and that'll be the end of it. And it was the end of it.
Right. But I mean, where would the curse have come? Yeah, I know it's a creepy one. We talk about in our cursed Hollywood presentations that Tim and I do. But do you have any aspect? Where did the curse begin? What was that first spark?
Well, it could have started with something that attached itself to Dean. I don't know what he was doing in his own personal life. I don't know if there was any occult involvements. You know, people in Hollywood, they mess around with all kinds of things they think are the latest trend and that are cool to do. I don't know. Or it could have been a problem with the car when he purchased it. But objects can carry, an entity. An entity can be attached to them. You find this constantly with antique dealers. I have communicated with one antique dealer and all kinds of accounts. Another woman wrote me for our website there, for Spirit Daily. She wrote me this long, involved account of what happened to this house she lives in near Lowell, Massachusetts, that had been owned by a sea captain, and just the extraordinary phenomena in the house, and with this one bed in her son's bedroom. Her son became deathly ill until they got rid of the bed. So these things can, you can call it a cursed bed, I guess, or else you can just call it a haunted bed. I don't know which, but I have no clue as to what happened in the case of Dean.
That's a weird one with the bed and the family. You know, cursed objects, possessed possessions, I think they call them. Yeah, those are stories that, we've covered throughout the years on the show. And it is bizarre how that energy does seem to affect and impact certain things. But then there are others, you know, that spend a lifetime collecting antiques and have absolutely nothing happen.
That's right. That's right. There's not too much that's predictable about the paranormal realm, except that it's unpredictable. It's operating at a level we're not used to in realities that we have not yet encountered. We can't see into these realms. We're wearing spiritual blinders. And I believe, frankly, that we're going to find out one day when we're on the other side looking back that there were just spirits all over the place, good, bad, angels, not angels, and deceased as well as spirits from the dark side and from heaven and so forth, if you will. And that a lot of things that happened to us in our lives, a lot of our moods, a lot of our problems, a lot of our successes were because of an interaction that we didn't realize with these forces that swirl around us, come in and out of our lives and affect us. And I think that it behooves us to make sure that what's affecting us is a bright entity and an angelic one, and not something that's coming from the wrong side and that is going to deceive us and is going to cause a lot of misery. You know, these things, they like to create dissension. They like to create fights. If you walk in there, you know how it is sometimes, you're in a great mood, all of a sudden you're in the presence of somebody and your mood just drops.
Right.
Or all of a sudden you're at this, there's this flashpoint and there's anger and there's a fight right out of the blue, you know. These things can be caused by entities. Entities love to cause anger because they feed off that energy. They love to cause fright. They want to scare you. That's why they make noises at night and do all these other things. Because when you're afraid, you're exuding, emanating, radiating, whatever you want to use as a term, energy. And that somehow empowers them because you know, they don't have access to it like they did when they were in the physical, if they're discarnate souls. So this is just my conjecture. This is what I've observed through, you know, since the 1970s when I started looking at haunted houses. I think it's extremely dangerous for the Zach Bagans to have this museum in Las Vegas with all of these artifacts from Charles Manson, from haunted houses. This one, he had to get rid of a rocking chair recently. Did you read about that?
Because right, from the Ed and Lorraine Warren Museum.
Yeah, because people were falling ill around it and so forth. It's, so many bad things were occurring.
Now, you don't think that that might just be some P.T. Barnum? That might be a little bit of, oh, somebody, you know, talked about having a headache and not feeling well, and they happen to come out of that room. That'd make a great TMZ story. Let's really hype this up.
Yeah, I think it can be. I think the same is true of those Ghost Hunter shows. Yeah, and the same thing with Finding Bigfoot, you know. So, yeah, I would agree with you. You can't believe every single thing is a paranormal manifestation. But paranormal manifestations there are, usually when we don't want them. But this guy's playing, he's playing with dangerous stuff. He bought Zach Bagans, I'm sure you know, but he bought that home in Gary, Indiana, that was violently, violently haunted. I interviewed the exorcist who had to be called in. He described a lot of things to me, and so did medical personnel and police officers. I mean, the policemen, after a while, wouldn't go near the family living in a house because there were so many bad things happening to them, including all their electronics going out and just illnesses, and the people in the house were getting deathly ill, and the noises. In one case, nurses in a hospital where there were a couple children in the house, where they were taken in the midst of this incredible poltergeist eruption, taken to a hospital, the nuns testified, and this is in the Indianapolis Star newspaper, did a whole long investigation of this. The nurses testified that at one point, this one young boy who was in the house walked up a wall. The end was taken over by something and walked halfway up a wall. Didn't just like run up it and jump. He walked, up the wall. And so that's certainly not anything that's very normal. Well, Zach Bagans, this P.T. Barnum of the paranormal, he bought that house. And so he could film a documentary, and his crew got all kinds of sick. They had tremendous dissension. There were unbelievable problems to the point where he had the place demolished. So I think some of it, yeah, they can be hyping it up. They can be exaggerating. They can be putting on an act on these ghost shows and so forth. But there is something real behind a lot of it. And once more, they're playing with fire.
Agreed. Now, let me ask you this. I know we were talking about some of the haunted items. You were talking about in the press release about the book, A Doll That Texts. What's the story behind that?
Well, I think we'd have to say dolls in the plural, because there are it's why I call this book Strangest of All, because there are cases where museums have dolls said to be haunted. And one of them is in the Keys, is in Key West. One of them was in Canada. There was, I interviewed a curator at a museum, and she was telling me about this. When she went to take over the museum, she had heard stories. They had an exhibit with a doll that was said to be haunted, that moved around, that would be in one place then another, the head would turn and so forth. It sounds like something out of Rod Serling in a Twilight Zone. But she told me that when she was starting the job, she bought a new phone. No one had yet She hadn't given anyone the number yet. And as she was driving to start this job at the museum where this doll, it's named Mandy. This was in British Columbia. Named Mandy was. She said she received a text. Most of it was indecipherable, but there were letters and symbols. And then the sign-off was an X and then the name Mandy. So something texted her saying Mandy, even though nobody at the museum she was going to start her new job that had access to her telephone number. And that was the name of this this doll. The one in Key West, I think, was called, I think it was named Robert. That was pretty weird, too. Staffers at the Fort East Martello Museum is the name of it. They were they had taken over this doll when people who purchased a house that had been owned by the person who owned the doll gave it to the museum. They didn't want it because they thought it wore a malevolent smirk and that it moved around when it couldn't be moving around. There was, I think, a workman in their attic who saw it move across the attic once they put it up there to get it out of their sight. Very unnerving. And when they brought it into the museum, what especially unnerved people was its comportment, its attitude. Staffers at the museum swore that the doll didn't like being moved, and it caused a stir anytime they rotated it through exhibits. And a number of visitors, and again, I interviewed the person in charge of the museum down there, and numerous visitors attested that the doll would turn its head to follow them as they were passing it. And strange behavior, those who moved the doll would find unpleasant things happen to them. So that was finally... I think it's still on exhibit. But once again, if anyone goes to Key West, I don't recommend visiting it or messing around with this stuff, because whether or not it's a doll, we're dealing with a spiritual realm.
The idea that reincarnation exists, that, you know, we've lived past lives, do you believe that this is also kind of a trick of... a form of deception, making us believe that, we have other chances? Where do you weigh in on this?
Well, I remember that famous case of Bridie Murphy I read when I was a young guy, and other cases, too. I remember I was myself, again, back in the days I was investigating. I went under hypnotic regression, past life stuff and everything. I don't believe in reincarnation. I do believe that people have supernatural recollections of other lifetimes, but that they're tapping into the lifetimes of other people, either clairvoyantly or because the spirit of the person is feeding them knowledge, or some type of preternatural entity is feeding them knowledge, detailed knowledge of another person's life. This is why, again, we have to be so very cautious not to get wrapped up in things before we take a real good long look at things, and do it from not just a skeptical standpoint, but from a spiritual standpoint. So myself, I don't believe it exists. I did it one time, and I understand why people do, because some of these books are impressive. You know, I'm sure they'll hit. They'll be able to describe a ship that they were on that sunk in the 1800s, and who was on it, and what happened, and so forth, because it's true. But, you know, you can pick things up in the ether that are true and don't mean you were actually there in the physical. So, you know, be careful not to be deceived, not to encounter, again, what I call lying wonders.
All right, we've got just a handful of minutes left here. What are a few of your other favorite stories that you put together in this book? Or if you have a few that you didn't put in the book to leave some surprises, where would you like to go next?
Well, you know, there are some mysteries that I sit here today, and I don't know if they were supernatural or not. I will tell you, I don't know if you want to hear one more thing that was pretty strange about Uri Geller, if you're done with him for the day.
No, you could feel free if you want to wrap up with another Uri Geller and another few stories. That's great.
When they were studying Uri Geller in the 1970s, by the way, it was funded by the Central Intelligence Agency and the Defense Advanced Research Project Agency. Okay, and there was a caseworker who was assigned to studying him. Anyway, what happened this one time was really bizarre, strangest of all, really, when it comes to psychics. There was the physicist was Dr. Don Curtis in this case, and he was at Lawrence Livermore Laboratories. Dr. Curtis was involved with the testing of Geller, and he and his wife were relaxing one afternoon during the Geller investigation when all of a sudden in their living room there was a hologram or an apparition, something materialized before their eyes in the middle of the living room. It can only be described really as bizarre, macabre, whatever you want to say. It was they saw what looked like this artificial arm draped by a black suit sleeve, just rotating as if on a spit. Instead of a hand, there was a hook at the end of it. Very, you know, very creepy, to say the least. Well, this caused, when they went back and told people, this really unnerved other scientists involved, and it infuriated this guy named Dr. Kit Green. He was the CIA caseworker. And so He met with two physicists involved, Dr. Hale Putoff and Dr. Russell Targ from Stanford Research Institute. And he demanded a meeting. They met at a motel. He wanted to know what's going on. What's this crazy story about them seeing this arm with a hook rotating in their living room and so forth. And while they were talking about it, he called it, one of the scientists quoted Dr. Green as calling it, quote, bizarre nonsense, unquote. And of course, anyone would. But at one point when they were discussing this, there was a bang on a door. And it wasn't like a polite knocking. It was an insistent knock. It wasn't even an insistent knock. It was like somebody trying to barge in. And, you know, they're sitting there stunned over this. They thought maybe they were ready to be robbed. This guy Green from the CIA, Dr. Green, he opened a door and with no words, no greeting, the short, middle-aged guy comes in a dark gray suit. He strides in, and he had an ashen complexion, they said, these scientists said, to match his suit. He just walked slowly around, muttering a few words they couldn't really comprehend, and left as quickly as he had entered. But while he did, those two scientists and the CIA official noticed that one of his suit sleeves was pinned up. He was missing an arm. The sleeve was empty. This, you know, so we think back at, you know, that arm that was rotating as if on a spit. This creepy stuff. Now, this was in association with Uri Geller. That's why I say it's not just power of the mind. It's not just psychic energy that you have to be careful. These things can go a lot wilder and a lot deeper than that.
Do you feel that by bringing this information out, sharing these stories, do you worry that it's going to just kind of entice people more into investigating the strange and supernatural, and they'll glom onto the flash and dazzle of it and ignore the warning advice?
Well, I certainly hope not. I pray not. Same thing with shows like this, you know, talking about it and so forth. You know, I hope that these warnings are heeded. You can't really do much when they aren't. I wanted to present a book that had interesting stories, that also subtly had messages to them and subtly had warnings. I don't preach in this book. But I think anyone with eyes to see and ears to hear can see the connections between many of these stories. And I just hope that they exercise prudence, because because prudence is extremely necessary in this realm.
I appreciate that and love the stories that you've had to share with us, and I hope you'll come back in the future when you have another book come out. I'm guessing you're already hard at work on the next one.
Not quite yet, no, because we have this daily website, like I said, spiritdaily.com, like a daily newspaper, and so I work at that every day. I am doing a magazine story on UFOs right now. I'm going to be submitting to a major magazine. We'll see where it goes. And discussing it from more of an intellectual standpoint, I'm not getting into any of these aspects, no paranormal aspects. It's strictly from the, you know, from a kind of scientific viewpoint.
Excellent. Michael, thank you so much. The book, again, we have a link up for it, and it's right on our page today, so you can find it. Order it. And please do me a favor, folks, when you order the book, Lying Wonders, Strangest Things, make sure that you rate and review the books, because that does help all of our authors to keep their books up in the realms and show the popularity of these styles of writings. So make sure you go rate and review. We will be back again next week with more of the best in paranormal talk radio, plus an interview from the new TV show Ghost Hunters on A&E, which begins airing on the 21st. We will be talking with two new members of that TV series. Make sure you tune in. Plus, next Saturday, more supernatural news and parashare here on the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness.
To get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.